Good evening. It's 6 minutes after 7. This is the evening edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And this is the spring fundraiser for KUAF. We are now in almost the final days of this spring fundraiser.
Mm-hmm. We'll be wrapping it up Saturday evening, and hopefully we will have met our goal of $150,000. We are well on our way, thanks to our fantastic contributing listeners. If you would like to become one of those contributing listeners, we have sent our phone volunteers home for the day, but you can just log on to supportkuaf.com and make your contribution there.
It's very simple, and you can determine the amount of your pledge that's left completely up to you.
That's right. You can look at your budget and see what you can afford. You best know what you can afford. And you also know how much you listen to public radio and how much you listen to KUAF, and you can determine a value for that time.
And that value is completely left up to you. If you want to make it in one payment, you can do that. If you'd like to break it up, make a bigger payment than perhaps you are able to right now, you can do that as well. And we understand that not everybody's in a position to financially give to KUAF. That's why it's important that if you are, you're here to preserve programs like Ozarks at Large and Fresh Air for those who are right now not in a position to give financially.
If you are able to give, we do ask that you do give at supportkuaf.com. I know oftentimes people think if they can't give, you know, thousands of dollars, then it doesn't count. And that's not true, because
not true
this
at all.
Is a community. It's a community-supported public radio station, and the community supports us, and the community is made up of several individuals, not just one with, you know, $1,000 to give us. It's several people giving anything from, you know, $5 to $1,000. Every little bit counts, and every dollar helps us get that much closer to our goal.
And you can, now the phone volunteers, as we mentioned, are gone, but you can contribute right now online. It's a safe, secure, and pretty efficient, easy way to do so. And that web address is?
SupportKUAF.com.
And from all of us at Ozarks at Large and KUAF, and from your fellow listener contributors.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. In just about 5.5 minutes, Digital Ambassadors for Northwest Arkansas Explain. That's ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large. First, temporary emergency rules regarding implementation of the state's voter ID law have been made permanent. The law was passed by the Arkansas legislature last year, and it allowed in-person voters without an ID to cast provisional ballots and gave those voters a grace period afterward to show an ID. But no similar allowance was given to absentee voters. In February, the Arkansas Board of Election Commissioners created a rule giving absentee voters the same recourse as in-person voters. Yesterday, that remedy was made permanent, which Justin Clay, director of the election board, said was procedural.
Our board followed a set of rules for voter identification and rules for poll watchers' vote challenges and provisional voting under the emergency provisions of the Administrative Procedures Act on February 28th. Emergency rules expire after 120 days, and so in order to make those rules permanent, they have to be promulgated under the permanent provisions.
But Chris Burks, Pulaski County Elections Commissioner, argues the move is another example of the state board overstepping its authority.
What we see is an effort to correct something that the legislature did over Governor Beebe's veto. So we have what I call a rear guard action, an effort to correct something that's broken, that's wrong. And I think in doing so, we're undermining the trust that voters have in our elected officials and the people who are supposed to oversee elections. We're in effect legislating about things and implementing rules.
The Pulaski County Elections Commission was already taking the state board to court over the absentee ID rule prior to yesterday's action. Circuit Judge Tim Fox is likely to set a timeline Monday for both commissions to submit arguments in advance of his judgment on whether the state board has authority to implement the change. Burke says a decision will be made in time for the May elections.
The Osteopathic Medical School planned to open in Fort Smith in a few years has named its president. Kyle Parker, a Fort Smith attorney and chairman of the Fort Smith Regional Healthcare Foundation, will serve as president and CEO of the Arkansas College of Osteopathic Medicine. According to the City Wire, Parker has been the lead on pushing for the college, which was announced in February. The college will reportedly cost $58 million to complete and serve 600 students when fully operational. Parker was previously at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, where he served as Vice Chancellor of Operations and oversaw the college's strategic direction for growth.
The Occupational Safety and Health Administration has reached a settlement with Advanced Environmental Recycling Technologies of Springdale. The Federal Safety Organization earlier this year levied a $51,000 fine against the company for one repeat and two serious safety violations discovered in an investigation following a fire in July at the facility that resulted in the death of one employee. As per terms of the settlement between OSHA and AERT, the company will pay a reduced fine of $44,000.
Teams from the University of Arkansas placed well in several categories in this year's Donald W. Reynolds Governor's Cup Collegiate Business Plan Competition. According to the university, the U of A swept the top three places in the competition's graduate division. Luma Drop took first place with their plan to commercialize an eye drop to treat macular degeneration. Datavis took second place with its image recognition software geared towards speeding up the inventory auditing process in retail applications. And Hemonautics took third place with its plan to improve doctors' accuracy in administering dosages of anticoagulant prescription drug. Meanwhile, the U of A's Biobiotic Solutions team took second place in the undergraduate competitions with its plan to commercialize a robot and container to automate tissue handling in pathology labs. LumaDrop, Datavis, and Biobiotic Solutions will move on to compete against the top two graduate and undergraduate teams from Nevada and Oklahoma for the Donald W. Reynolds Tri-State Award in May. That's in Las Vegas.
Benton County officials have issued a burn ban until tomorrow morning when conditions will be reevaluated. According to the U.S. Drought Monitor, all of Benton and portions of surrounding counties are listed as abnormally dry, and the National Weather Service predicts wind gusts as high as 40 miles per hour today at the Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport.
And the forecast this evening calls for partly cloudy skies with overnight lows from 53 in Northwest Arkansas to 57 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, Friday, partly sunny with a 30% chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms. Highs from 74 to 78. Tomorrow evening, mostly cloudy with lows around 55. Often report on the efforts of the Northwest Arkansas Council to spread the word about Northwest Arkansas being a great place to live and to conduct business. The Council collaborates with business and civic leaders, local chambers of commerce, and other key stakeholders to develop and implement a strategy for improving Northwest Arkansas. Last November, the Council added another collaborator to the list when they introduced their Digital Ambassadors Program. The new collaborator, the community. The program encourages individuals in the community to spread news that positively impacts Northwest Arkansas. Individuals sign up on the Council's website, committing to sharing positive messages about the region via their personal social media accounts. Rob Smith is Communications and Policy Specialist with the Council. He's responsible for generating the content that is shared.
Yeah, you'll receive an email. You decide based on the content of that email. That email will tell you, hey, we've got some great new content. The Walmart amp in Rogers is, you know, preparing to be open by June. And you'll just hit a button that says share now. And if you want to share that, you don't have to share it. You certainly can. And when you hit share now, depending on whether you've added Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, that will go out to all of your social media feeds.
Almost half of the digital messages get shared through Twitter. They don't have to share everything, but in return for what they do share, ambassadors earn points. Actions that get users points are things like recruiting new ambassadors, earning the most points at 100 per new ambassador. Bigger points also go for messages that cause others to take action, like having a message retweeted on Twitter or having someone comment on a Facebook post. Those are worth more than opening the email that users receive about once a week from the Digital Ambassadors Program.
The way you win is you earn the most points. And why do you want to win? Because you get a prize. And the prize is dinner and a movie. The prize is a gift certificate. The prize is something from a restaurant. Could be really a whole host of things. You know, we try to come up with a prize that each month's worth $100 or maybe $150.
Martine Pollard is the council's March winner, earning 10,590 points, though she wasn't the top earner. The top earner was also the February winner, and the rules don't allow for the same winner 2 months in a row. As a natural advocate for the area, she says it didn't take any convincing for her to sign up to be an ambassador.
When the council launched this, it was a great way for us to be able to share our voice around why Northwest Arkansas is so great. And not only talking about it to our peers and to our counterparts, but really reach other parts of the state and other parts of the country. So essentially, it's just a lot of fun for me. It's a great thing for us to talk about, and it's a great place to be.
Though she has a full-time job and two kids, in addition to maintaining an active role in the community, Martine says being a top ambassador takes no time at all. She's competitive, but earning a prize is not her ultimate goal. The goal is bragging on Northwest Arkansas. Reaching out to the community comes naturally for Martine. It's her job. She's the executive director of communications for Mercy Health Northwest Arkansas, and she knows the power of social media.
If you want to get into the tactics and be very strategic, you do gain additional points for the postings that you make. So say on Facebook, there's a certain post. If somebody shares that or comments on it or likes it, you get certain additional points. So you could probably get pretty strategic about how you can maximize the points that you get. I frankly don't do that, but you know, the more friends you have, the more followers you have, the network of people that you can reach is pretty impressive.
If we assume that Martine's 884 Facebook friends, 705 Twitter followers, and 500 LinkedIn connections are unique, a message has the ability to connect with over 460,000 people. Of course, there is some overlap. She most likely shares a few friends with Rob Smith. But the hope is that the word gets spread outside of the region.
Certainly a lot of this content moves within the region, but all of us have friends somewhere else. And the hope is that they see a message about Northwest Arkansas, that they share a story that about Northwest Arkansas, maybe trivia or something about this region they didn't know, that their friends didn't know.
Messages that have been shared the most are related to population growth, with a March 17th message receiving 563 unique clicks and 16,631 estimated impressions. Top topics also include jobs announcements and upgrades to the quality of life here in the region. In addition to sharing the messages written by the council, users can write their own messages about things happening in the region via a white box on the Northwest Arkansas Council's Digital Ambassadors homepage. But in order to earn points, these messages must be marked with one of three hashtags. Martine says this allows a user to create a comprehensive picture of what Northwest Arkansas is really like.
If you do choose to follow the hashtag NWARK, or what's it? What are the others?
NWARK or Great Place NWA. They're both hashtags that allow you to use to earn points if you use them in your conversations mm-hmm. on Twitter and Facebook, etc. Mm-hmm. So we're really talking about two things. One is the message the council sends out, which is about once a week. But many of our ambassadors then go in and use the hashtag in just their own messages and earn points that way.
New members sign up daily. The program started with 17 and currently has 415 Northwest Arkansas ambassadors, and most of them share posts. Over half are women, and the average age is about 43. In an effort to reach a younger demographic, the council last week added another avenue for sharing with Instagram. In January, 90% of Instagram's users were under the age of 35.
Instagram's a whole new way to connect, and it allows people to share photos. You know, there are millions of people who have Instagram accounts, and it's one more way to tell a story about Northwest Arkansas. So the way that'll work, they'll earn points in the same system, but if they share a photo and they use the hashtag NWARK, they earn points that way. So not every message is a group of words like the ones we've shared so far. They'll become pictures. So that's kind of a nice addition.
The Northwest Arkansas program is modeled after similar ones in El Paso, Texas, and Tampa Bay, Florida. All use the national social media management company Social Toaster for rules and formatting. To sign up for the Northwest Arkansas Digital Ambassador Program, visit nwacouncil.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is the Thursday evening edition of Ozarks at Large. It's also the spring fundraising week for KUAF, an annual event that we take a few minutes in between stories and news programs to remind you that the reason we can bring you the programs like Ozarks at Large and Performance Today, Fresh Air, All Things Considered, and Shades of Jazz, the reason we can bring you all those programs and so many more, because listeners pay for the vast majority of our programs, the biggest part of our budget. About two-thirds, a little bit more than two-thirds, comes from you and listeners just like you. It's the way many public radio stations work. We think it's fantastic because that means the people who benefit from KUAF the most, who listen the most, who use it the most, are the people who keep it here. It's a very simple process. You can make a pledge right now online at supportkuaf.com. After 7 o'clock, the phone volunteers are gone, but we'll continue to be able to take your pledges online. Supportkuaf.com. You determine the amount and you determine the method. And we have so many methods that you can use to become a member, including debit or credit card. If you go online, it will ask you all that information. You can make a payment at one installment. You can break it up. You could become a sustaining member, which means that you would have a commitment to so much a month that would be taken from your debit card or through a bank draft, or if you're a University of Arkansas employee, through a payroll deduction. And then maybe it's $5, $10, $20 a month. A small amount per month that's automatically drafted adds up to a significant and reliable source of income for KUAF. We have over 500 of our listeners who have become members and are doing that now. So if you'd like to become a sustaining member, you can do that right now at supportkuaf.com. And thank you.
Most Saturday mornings, rural Huntsville resident Arandu Sunku can be seen at the Madison County Recycling Center sorting plastics, cardboard, and cans, faithfully doing his civic environmental duty. But what makes this recycler special is that Arandu is a dog. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Today is the last day of Madison County's bulky waste roundup, and the county recycling center is jammed with trucks and trailers. Weekend recyclers are also here dropping off detergent jugs, milk bottles, and aluminum cans at the sorting station, including Susanna Donnelly and her companion, Arandu Sunku, a big and very busy black lab.
Are you socializing? That's tin. Let's take it to tin. Don't eat it. Come pick it up, please. I dropped my keys. Good boy. Good boy. That's my boy.
One by one, she pulls containers and chipboard from her satchel and hands them to him, which he dutifully carries, sometimes a bit circuitously, to the correct bin.
Arandu, cereal.
Oh, where are the cereals?
Arandu's been recycling for more than 3 years now. And Susanna Donnelly, a beautiful white-haired woman, is originally from Buenos Aires, Argentina, and came to the United States in 1968 when she was 15 years old with her father, Rodolfo Martinez. At the time, he served as an Organization of American States Secretary of the Department of Education, Science, and Culture. He eventually returned home, but Donnelly married and settled in the Washington, D.C. area, raising two daughters, one who serves as a U.S. diplomat in Cyprus, another who works for the International Monetary Fund. Susanna, she moved to Orlando, Florida, where she ended up adopting a pup, one of 12 strays, a mix of black lab and Dalmatian.
So Arandu picked me. He came, and when he was ready to be weaned from the mother, I went to see all the puppies, and we were putting them out, and He just barked himself between my legs, and that was the end of that.
She named the pup, laying at her feet, Arandu Sonku, which is Incan for intelligent heart in the Quechua language. He's a lumbering, shiny, black-coated, handsome guy with a white-tipped tail and white spots across his chest. And as he grew older, he exhibited an uncanny talent for fetching.
I hang his collar on the knob of the house and the door to go to the outside. And I just said one day, go get your collar. And the dog went and got his collar. And I'm wide-eyed in awe.
Soon, Arandu was grooming the neighborhood during their daily walks in Florida, but then he started spontaneously recycling at the house.
After Christmas, where I had a lot of cardboard boxes, and I just told him to pick up a box and bring it over and go and get another one from the car and bring it over. And I'm not guiding him. I just tell him to go get it, and I'm out of sight. And he started doing it.
Susanna purchased her dream Ozarks Farmette, she calls it, 6 years ago south of Huntsville, where she keeps several horses. She's since adopted a border collie, but Arandu is the main farmhand, or farm paw. He brings in firewood, helps to clear pasture, fetches the horse's dishes, and can even lead the mare on walks. He also gathers laundry at the house for washing. Labrador, Susanna says, means worker in Spanish, after all. She trains both her pups using repetition and cheese.
The dogs are bilingual or trilingual. They understand hand commands, English and Spanish.
Standing at the recycling bay, volunteer Mark McGee says Arandu is brilliant.
The boards here are colored for cardboard and newspaper. Blue is for newspaper, and I think he resembles the color and knows exactly where to go. And I think he can pick up on a just the plastic, and he's done it. It's just like a little maneuver for him, you know, and it's amazing to watch him in action.
When they're done, Arandu walks to the office to pay the cashier the weekly trash fee.
I give it to him, and he'll put his paws onto the counter and pay.
With a slobbery paper bill, but Amy Smith, the cashier, loves it.
He's just a fun little guy. It keeps it happy and wonderful around here.
Madison County Solid Waste and Recycling Center, in operation since 1989, is one of the most ambitious in the state, and it's kept 41 million pounds of waste out of regional landfills. Director Larry Kerrigan Winter.
What's unique about the facility is that we take everything, everything. It's a one-stop drop. We buy metals, we buy cans, we take Freon, we take appliances, we take all the household recycling, we take all the household hazardous waste, we take construction debris. We take tires.
So far, Arandu has yet to recycle a tire at the center, but he has cleaned up small waste tires on the farm. Center operator Alex Cruikshank says that Arandu is a model citizen.
You know, he's not only a friend and companion, but, you know, he tries to help us out in keeping our planet beautiful.
But the one thing Arandu apparently cannot do on command is bark.
Speak, Arandu. Speak, Arandu, speak, 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 speak.
Quiet and handy. What more could you ask for in a dog? For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To see a video of Arandu recycling a giant piece of cardboard, visit ozarksatlarge.com.
It is Thursday, April 10th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, star of stage and screen as well.
Thank you so much. I'm going to encourage people to go to the Art Center of the Ozarks. Why? Not for Blythe Spirit. We've pushed that hard enough. I need to shut up. This is Visual Arts Thursday. Mm-hmm. And right now, the Art Center of the Ozarks has an exhibit of high school area artists.
Oh, knew it. It's a competition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing it for years and years and years and years and years and years and years. And you would be amazed what the kids come up with.
I often am, yes.
I bet they're better artists than I.
If you still have last Friday's What's Up, go check out the photographs of some of their work, because it is absolutely amazing that high school kids are that good. And if you go and you love it, you could go today. Mm-hmm. They're there from 9 to 5. There's a reception for the kids tomorrow from 1 to 3. Oh. I mean, on Saturday,
okay,
rather.
Saturday.
Sorry,
okay.
From 1 to 3.
And you can go and congratulate the kids and see who won the prizes.
Sounds great.
And it is, of course,
absolutely free.
I love it when that happens.
Yeah. Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Oh, I'm on? Okay. Hi, this is R.J. Mitchell. One more time. Take four. This is R.J. Mitchell. I'll be with my buddy Paul next Friday night at 9 p.m. on the next edition of the Generic Blues Show right here at KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Isn't that wonderful? I would love to have this on my front door. It's my doorbell.
Once a month, we pursue the story behind a name we're familiar with in this region. This month's installment of What's in a Name begins in Fort Smith's Belgrove District with Kate Morris, the president of the Bonneville House Association Board.
It's dear to my heart because I had my rehearsal dinner here, and when my children were baptized, we had their lunch here after the baptism for family and friends, and I've come to many weddings and parties, and so there's a lot of memories.
The Bonneville House is a few blocks from Garrison Avenue in downtown Fort Smith. Built in the middle of the 19th century, it's been a residence, it's been in disrepair, it's been the social center for women who play bridge, and now a nonprofit venue for gatherings. Over the decades, the interior has been adapted. The furniture, mirrors, and accoutrements date from different eras, all donated to help tell a story of Fort Smith through time. The lighting in the spacious drawing room, for example, doesn't hail from the 1860s. They're crystal chandeliers in the shape of palm tree leaves.
Oh, I love the chandeliers.
Yeah, now the chandeliers are obviously, they're very Art Deco 20s, but everyone loves them so much, so we don't dare take them down and be period correct because they're so fabulous. And of course, if they ever bring them down, there's probably a list, with me included, who would buy them in a second.
The house shares its name with one of the more remarkable historic figures associated with Fort Smith.
His name was Benjamin Lewis Eulalie, E-U-L-A-L-I-E, small D-E, and then Bonneville.
Joe Wasson is with the Fort Smith Historical Association, and he knows quite a bit about General Bonneville. General Bonneville was born in France. His father, Nicholas Bonneville, ended up on the wrong side of the political spectrum from Napoleon and was jailed. It was Thomas Paine, yes, that Thomas Paine, who wrote Common Sense, who brought Bonneville, his brother, and his mother to the United States in 1803.
Ben Bonneville was sent to West Point. Graduated 2 years later, so that would be 1815. Made a second lieutenant in the army. That was in New England. Then he was sent to Mississippi, and then he was sent to Fort Smith. And according to what I've been able to figure out, he came to Fort Smith in 1822 in General Arbuckle's 7th Infantry Division, along with John Rogers, who became the founder of the city of Fort Smith.
Bonneville established himself as quite a military man, but he is best perhaps known for the expedition of 1832, when he left Missouri with over 100 men and went west. It was a field trip financed by John Jacob Astor, and it resulted in the blazing of the Oregon Trail.
And he went out there and built a little fort that they named Fort Bonneville and tried real hard to make friends with all the Native Americans that were involved with the fur trade out there, and tried to make friendly with the British and the French and the Russians. But everybody out there realized why he was really there, which was to scout out the area for American fur trade, for the American fur trade. And they really... didn't meet with any success. By the time he came back in 1833, he had been declared dead because he was only supposed to be gone for 2 years.
He wasn't dead, of course, and in fact sold his story to Washington Irving, yes, that Washington Irving, for $1,000. Eventually, he retired in Fort Smith. But here's the kicker. The house we call the Bonneville House, he never lived in.
No, he didn't. He retired to Fort Smith in 1869, and he built what was at the time a grand wooden house on his acreage. And that was the original Bonneville House. And he lived there happily ever after until he died in 1878.
And it was his young widow who then actually moved in.
And that's something that I've been working on. His wife was 50 years younger than him.
Not an entirely unusual arrangement for the time. An older rich man has a younger woman marry him, and she helps him through the last years of his life.
He died in 1878, and she apparently lived there until at the wooden Bonneville House. She apparently lived there until 1881, I believe it was, when she bought a nice brick two-story house. They would have considered it a mansion in those days, here on 7th Street in Fort Smith.
And that's the house, still on 7th Street, that is now known as the Bonneville House. You can learn much more about its history at the website bonnevillehouse.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
And this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Kyle, we just heard that story about Bonneville in our What's in a Name series, something that we started doing maybe about a year ago.
I think you're right.
Once a month, we pick something in our listening area that maybe we don't know where the name came from.
And even if we know, I don't think at any time for any of these What's in a Name stories have we come away not learning something.
But oh, for sure.
You did Wilson Park, right?
That was the first one that I ever did, yeah.
And then didn't you find out that Lake Wilson is also named for the same person?
Actually, it's not the same person.
It's not the same person.
Right? That's what I learned. That's what I found out. But no, it's really interesting because I've lived in this area my entire life. And there are things, I mean, just right down the street from the radio station that I'm still curious as to what, you know, where it came from.
And one of the great things about What's in a Name is that we're never going to run out of things to tell you about these. And I think this series really kind of brings home the whole idea that we are not three or four communities in our listening area, but we are one. Now, someone who's grown up in Fort Smith may very well know who General Bonneville was, but that doesn't mean someone in Siloam Springs or in Berryville or in Waldron did.
Right.
And likewise, when you find out why something in Benton County, like all the towns in Benton County that you've done, are named what they are, someone, you know, in Fort Smith or Barling may not know that. And I think it draws us closer together. That's one of the things we try to do with Ozarks at Large is, hey, this is a pretty cool part of the world. We're all here together. It's not just Northwest Arkansas and the River Valley or something like that.
Southwest Missouri.
Right.
Eastern Oklahoma.
Right. We've been able to do this daily show on Ozarks, on KUAF, Ozarks at Large, the daily show, about 3.5 years now. My one concern when we started this was, will there be enough material? That is not our concern.
It is not. Sometimes it's a struggle to cover all of the things that we need to cover.
We just can't.
No.
And making peace with that has been difficult.
Right.
Appreciate the efforts that we have to cover this area that does extend from Tahlequah to Harrison, from McDonald County, Missouri, down to Waldron and Mena, if you appreciate hearing stories from your neighborhood, but also from the other side of this region, remember that we're able to do this because of listener support.
Only with listener support. And if you have yet to make your contribution during the spring on-air fundraiser, now is a great time to do so. You can do so now at our secure website, supportkuaf.com. It's an easy form, just takes a couple of minutes to fill out. And you know that you have made you've done your part to make Ozarks at Large happen for the rest of the community.
Now, we don't have phone volunteers in the building now in the Carver Center for Public Radio. We will tomorrow at noon. And if you're a fan of the Roots Festival, During the noon show, the noon edition of Ozarks at Large, all this week we've been thanking people for listening during the fundraiser by allowing you a chance to register to win one of two packages of Roots Festival merchandise. Hoodies, caps.
Koozies.
Beer glasses, the whole nine yards. Two packages of significant amount of the 2013 edition of Roots Festival.
Limited edition.
So make a note, if you want to be registered to get in on the drawing that takes place tomorrow on the noon edition, you got to call in tomorrow between 12 and 12:30 during the show. You don't have to give money. You could contribute online right now at supportkuaf.com. It's open to everybody, whether you want to become a member or not, whether you already have, whether you have no intention to. But that's tomorrow, and we'll give those items away. But you have to be listening and call in between 12:30 or 12:40 tomorrow. We'll give the packages away during the last 10 minutes or so of tomorrow's noon edition.
Right. We'll put all of the names in our ceramic cow and draw a couple.
So. Yeah, that'll be fun. And remember that you can also go online right now and register for those sold-out VIP passes. There are two that we'll give away in August, but you can register now at KUAF.com. Speaking of the web,
supportkuaf.com to support.
And from all of us,
thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. John Register has quite a story to tell. A graduate of the University of Arkansas and a former member of the University of Arkansas track and field team, he qualified for the U.S. Olympic trials in 1988 and 92 and was on his way to making the U.S. Olympic team in 1996 when a simple misstep over a hurdle changed his life. The fluke accident caused severe damage and led to the amputation of a leg. He continued to compete in athletic events, winning a silver medal in the long jump at the 2000 Paralympic Games in Sydney. A veteran of the Army, he served in Desert Shield and Desert Storm and also competed in the Army's world-class athletic program. Now he works for the U.S. Olympic Committee, and John Register was back at his alma mater this week as the 2014 Arkansas Alumni Association's Johnson Fellow. The fellowship, endowed by Jeff and Marcia Johnson, is designed to bring alumni back to campus to engage and inspire students. When John Register came to the Carver Center for Public Radio earlier this week, he had just been speaking to juniors at Fayetteville High School.
So I had maybe 20 minutes, right, to talk to this group of students who are coming in, the backpacks on, headphones on, and kind of who's this guy is going to be speaking to us. I get out of class for 20 minutes, and it's really I was thinking hard about how do I engage them right off the bat. And so I have a series of arsenal of stories that I can use, but I wanted to get them to understand that life is fragile, life can take unexpected turns, and get to a moment in time for them that creates their new normal. You know, that's one of the outcomes of my messages is to how do we create our new normals? Every day we're doing it. So I want that at that young of an age to see that they are every day working towards something that's going to be in the future. I never knew I was going to be a Johnson Fellow, right? This happened because of a series of things that happened in my life, my time at the university, to the other people I met in the United States Army, to those I met in the United States Olympic Committee. All these folks in my life really poured into me that created my new normals, and I accepted those gifts, those offers from people. So to get to those young folks, you know, you have to get them engaged early, and we have to remember what we were like at that age. What was it like for me when I came in and sat and listened to a guest presenter? That was that's the mindset I put myself in. So I told a very humorous story. But my first story I told was about the accident, that life changes quickly. But then what did I learn from that? Then it's a humorous story that got them engaged. And then we did an activity because people don't like to sit there and listen to a talking head. We want to do something with it. So it was getting the folks that had the right brain, the left brain, and those that need the tactile, like myself, to engage them.
When you talk to young people who might be, I guess this could extend up the age ladder, but when you talk to young people who perhaps we think have a sense of
invincible,
thank you. They think they're invincible. I would imagine that's where your story can really resonate with them, because when you were at the peak of youth, peak of your physical ability, you had that new normal thrust upon you.
Right, and I think we all do, but at that age, we do think we're invincible. We think we're going to live forever, and we're not focused on the right now instead of what's coming next. And my accident was just that. It was a freak accident. I went across a hurdle during a training session. I landed wrong, awkwardly, hyperextended my left leg. And I went from being the eighth fastest 400-meter hurdler in the country to flat on my back, and 5 days later, subsequently because of the amputation, the popliteal artery being severed, an amputation ensued. So I had to create my new normal. It was created for me, right? Mm-hmm. It was due to trauma. But what happens, that, as I told the young folks today, is what happens when you see you're driving, like you're in this nice, beautiful-looking car, and life is going along great, and you see a cliff coming up. Do you have the ability to change direction, to change course before you actually get there? So if I would have seen what was my life, and the life is going along great, and I saw that becoming an Army officer, going to the Olympic Games was my dream, if I saw this path, would I have the courage to change my direction on my own instead of having trauma actually take it? Would I drive my car off the cliff, or would I turn the car? And that's the dynamic. Sometimes in life, if we're making the transition and the leap to the next level that we want to get to, we may not have the courage to take the steering wheel and just turn it. Sometimes we just drive off the cliff because we're comfortable. And then the car crashes, and now we have to create the new normal from there. And it's a lot tougher to do it because, of course, we've gone down so much, we have to pick ourselves back up. So that's the gist of it within the creation of those new normals. We have to either do it through trauma, or we do it because we see the inevitable coming.
Getting rid of the comfortable can be tough.
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, our comfort zones are our comfort zones. That's why they're there. Mm-hmm. But without resistance, you know, we're not going to move forward. There has to be some resistance for us to appreciate the place where we have been. And every time we move to maybe a new job, or maybe we lost a loved one and we have to come out from underneath that, or whatever the situation might be, there's always some type of dynamic of uncomfortability, if that's a word, that moves us to and pushes us to the next transition. There's a story about the Japanese fishermen. They were bringing fish to market. But every time they brought the fish to market, the fish would spoil because they were in these static tanks. And so they're trying to figure, well, how can we get them to market fresh so we can kill them, right, and then eat them and they're fresh. So they put an agent in the water, an antagonist of the fish, so that would chase them around the pool in the water, so that when they got to the market, they were not stagnant, they were exercise, so then they could be killed to be eaten, right? And we need sometimes to put an antagonist in our water tank to make us move so that we can get to the next level.
What do you reasonably hope someone, be it a 20-minute or 40-minute presentation, takes away? Because they might be inspired at that moment. Mm-hmm. They might feel good. And some will take away a lesson. What do you reasonably hope generally they take away?
So usually it's one thing, because if it's too many things, I got, you know, what I find in presentation, what people will tell me after a presentation, is a litany of things they heard from that presentation. So that got me to thinking, okay, what can I get them to do that's one thing they could take away? So I make it a very general request or an offer for them. So I will say at the end of the towards the end of the presentation, you've been thinking about a lot of stuff. I've been telling you some stories here. I've been giving you some points. Inevitably, you have thought about something or someone or somehow a process by which you got to a situation that you were in. Whatever that thing was, I want you to write it down, and then I want you to think a little bit about that harder, about what was the process that got you to this one moment in time, because that will serve for you as a process. That one activity will serve as a process for you by which you might be able to measure other things, challenges that come in your life. How do we hurdle our adversities? It's we hurdle them by changing our perspective, by tolerating confusion, that is, something comes against us that we don't think is correct or right, but we have to go through the process in order to test those theories to make sure they're right. And we change. Then the third thing is we skin our knees, we take risks. And the fourth thing is we have to pursue our passions. So with all those things, I challenge the audience to then take one thing away. And then I ask them to do a physical with, after you've done that, I want you to write me back and let me know what it was that you either changed or you were thinking about, because the stories that come out of it are just amazing. Some people have, like after today, there was the reason I started in this space, I didn't know why I was going to start that way, but sometimes it's just a godsend, right? And we have a young woman teacher over at the high school came up to me afterwards and said she had just lost her son five months prior. And that junior class was in the junior class, was struggling with that. And so this creating the new normal message was spot on for them today. And that's why they were so heavily engaged, because they had a personal investment in it with a physical, tangible tragedy that they were dealing with and trying to overcome with that inside that struggle. And so the challenge then is to get them, we have this situation. How do we turn that into something that we can offer to other people of the experience? And it's painful right now. That it's and I think I can't remember who the comedian was that said it, but comedy is pain plus time, right? Same as tragedy. Tragedy is pain plus time. How can we tell the stories? It's going to be the painful process, and sometimes we can't tell that story right away. We have to wait until we get removed enough from it that we can come back and tell it so they can have a relevant point to our audiences.
Stories have always been an important part of our culture, mm-hmm. but now it seems like with TED Talks and with the podcasts like The Moth and people telling stories, it seems like stories are more as valued as they've been in a long time. Did you hear stories growing up from family members or friends?
Yeah, all the time I heard stories. I mean, probably the most profound story that I didn't know about from my youth was around the civil rights movement. And I didn't realize how engaged my family was within inside of that. My father was a Presbyterian minister. He was jailed in Hattiesburg, Mississippi for voter rights, you know. Wow. And then my Uncle McGloster Current, was the executive director of branches for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, which is all people. And he was in charge of the March on Washington, all the platform speakers. I'm like, wow, right? And you think about who was on that day. I mean, there were celebrities that were on that day. There were politicians. You know, of course, Dr. King went off on a tangent on this "I Had a Dream" speech thing that was became one of the most profound speeches in our history. And you know, it's just those people within inside of us that really inspire us. And again, it goes back to the whole inspirational model. We hear these stories, but stories are so relevant and important, and they're personal. That we own them. Because they happen to us, and that gives to the speaker the authenticity with inside of every presentation. And I love telling the story, but we also have to, with the story, craft what is the point, what's the message of the story.
Does that apply in we're not all, well, I guess I am a professional, someone who's paid to talk, but not everybody is someone who's paid to talk or be heard. But can this apply over the kitchen table? Have a point, tell the story, try to inspire?
Yeah, I think it's twofold, right? I think that when you're around the dinner table, that's when you have your pen and paper out, because you hear the most incredible stories around there, and you're trying to steal information. It's like, that'll be great for my talk, right? but those are funny situations, because they are around our dinner tables, and that is just a fun collaborative, because it helps us, because all of us do it. Right. And so we know the story. So when Uncle Johnny with the, you know, like myself, is the guy with the one leg, and they tell the funny story about him, you know, we can associate with that. So I think that's one way. And we're just kind of telling stories for story's sake. This is what happened to me today. But then when you take that story and you make a message out of it, one of the things I just did recently with a great, great storyteller, story theater for business world, is Doug Stevenson. And he is a phenomenal guy. If you don't know this guy, y'all out there in radio land, look him up. Doug Stevenson's brilliant. And he has a 9-step story method. And I said, okay, I'm going to see if this actually really works. So I took one of my most painful stories that I've never really told before. And I took it to him, and I began to work with him on it. And the payout of it was just amazing. So it's just a story about my limb loss and how I lost the leg, and the tragedy around that, and the emotion I want my audience to connect with. I want them to feel that pain, because we all experience pain that deep. And it's not about the limb loss of my leg. It's about my audience feeling the pain that they had in their life for whatever it is they lost. And from the outcome of it is I paint the picture of I'm sitting in a wheelchair. I've lost 50 pounds. I can't push myself out of the chair, and I'm thinking about all these things in my head about what I am now, how I'm valuing myself, coming face to face with some of my own fears, frailty, and some prejudice that I had against, even people with disabilities at that time. So all these things were mixing together. Who am I now? What's my identity? Am I still a father to my wife? Am I still a father to my son, a husband to my wife? Do I still have a job in the United States Army? How do I pay for my family? I don't know what's going on. And all these negative thoughts were coming down on me and making me go on a downward spiral. My son and my wife were playing on the swing set off in the distance about 20 feet away because I couldn't get out of the chair. And I was sitting there, and my wife saw me struggling and breaking down, and as I was crying, she comes over and she says to me, and as she wrapped her arms around me, "You know what, John? We are going to get through this together. This is just our new normal. It's just our new normal." So my reflection on that is all of us are creating our new normals. I had to create my new normal every single day, minute by minute, sometimes second by second. I'm creating my new normal for the place where I want to be. John Jr. jumps off the swing. He's 5 years old, does his little cartwheel, comes over. "Daddy, daddy, daddy, what's going on?" Well, John had just validated me as his father. And in 3 seconds from jumping off the swings and coming and running over to me, he had created his new normal. So the transfer to the audience is, how about you?
It sounds like you married a pretty good inspirational speaker.
I
too.
Did. Yes, exactly right.
One final question, a bit off the topic. Where's your silver medal? What do you do with it?
Silver medal is actually in my bag. I'm showing it around.
Wow,
yeah,
really?
I don't keep it. Actually, Julie Preddy was talking about how she had an experience with Mike Conley, of course.
When he was on the square.
On the square,
yes.
And passed his medal around.
Yes.
Do the same thing. Some athletes will keep it behind the glass, and that's fine, you know, because it's a precious thing. But I love to share it because how many chances do you get a chance to touch someone who was either number one, number two, or number three in the world on that specific day and touch what the results of it was in a tangible way, right? And every medal's different. You know, mine's from Sydney, Australia. It's got some cool markings on the back from from all the venues around Sydney, Australia. So I always pass it around to my audiences, let them touch it, it's tangible. I've never worried about somebody actually ever taking it because it's just that the weight of it. People just recognize the work that went into it. This is 20 years of my life for one piece of hardware that resulted in from six jumps on October the 23rd at 10:30 in the morning in Sydney, Australia, right?
Well, and you say every medal is different. To extend a metaphor, we all have different medals
exactly
that we
right.
carry with us and like to show off.
We do.
Hopefully, we do.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right.
John, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, I'm so honored to be here. Thank you.
John Register was on the University of Arkansas campus and in Fayetteville this week as the 2014 Arkansas Alumni Association's Johnson Fellow. His website, if you'd like to learn more, is johnregister.com. And that will just about do it for this edition of Ozarks at Large. Thanks everyone who has contributed during the spring fundraising week so far. Christina, Antoinette, and I will be back tomorrow at noon with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. And again, if you'd like to contribute right now while you're thinking about it, you can do so online at supportkuaf.com. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Waldron. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. For my co-producers and colleagues, Antoinette Grajeda and Christina Thomas, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great Thursday night. We'll be back with you another brand new edition tomorrow at noon.